Hello and welcome to the Risk Map podcast, part of the global conversation on geopolitics and security, produced by Control Risks, the leading international risk consultancy. I'm Charles Hecker in London.
Also in London, I'm Jonathan Wood, the Director of Global Issues.
And currently in Athens, I'm David Lee, Senior Analyst for Western Europe. Welcome to the podcast.
We've brought Jonathan and Dave to this week's podcast because London on Wednesday was the latest European city to suffer a terrorist attack. 52-year-old British-born Khalid Masood killed four people and injured dozens by ramming into them with a rented car before penetrating the perimeter of the British Parliament and stabbing a police officer to death. Masood was then himself killed by a police bullet. Islamic State has already claimed responsibility for the attack, and a painstaking police investigation is underway. Jonathan is our lead analyst on transnational terrorism and has been looking carefully of late at the evolution of attack methodology and what it means for prevention and response. Among other things, Dave watches France, Belgium, and Germany, sites of a series of terrorist attacks in recent years. We'll talk to Dave about what these attacks in Western Europe do and don't have in common. Jonathan, let's start with you. Give us your thoughts, if you can, on the emergence of vehicular attacks as a terrorist technique. Why does this seem to be increasingly popular?
This type of attack, vehicular attack, has the capacity to cause substantial casualties and thereby gain substantial publicity. And this probably explains why it is increasingly popular. It's very low tech. It's obviously a type of attack that can be carried out by any individual in any location, anywhere throughout Western Europe, or indeed the rest of the world. And it also satisfies the criteria of what groups like Islamic State, but also Al-Qaeda and other militant groups are looking to achieve, and that is mass casualty incidents that have a high degree of publicity and visibility. Now, there are a few things that are unique about this most recent incident in London, and of course, another incident yesterday, the 23rd of March in Antwerp, which did not result in any injuries or casualties. These have occurred in, if you like, high-profile locations, and the one outside Parliament in particular, a symbolic location, and one of the most heavily defended parts of both London and the UK, and by extension, Western Europe. So in that sense, it's interesting that while most of these attacks have occurred in places, public spaces, parts of city centers, which are somewhat removed from the hardened areas of these Western European cities, this was an attack that was right at the heart of the UK's political establishment, but also right at the heart of the parts of the city that are relatively heavily defended. And it just goes to show how difficult it is to defend and protect against this type of vehicular attack in an urban area where open access is an absolute essential requirement for daily life.
Jonathan, but the move away from explosive devices, the move away from moving forms of transportation, trains and planes, is that something that's going to continue? Are those techniques and approaches something of the past?
Those techniques are very much still part of the threat assessment. And the attack in London occurred, of course, on the one-year anniversary of an Islamic State-conducted attack against the airport in Brussels using a very large quantity of explosives. A rare attack, to be sure, in the European context, but something which is still part of the threat environment. And that's really what we're looking at in Europe, Chuck. It's a threat environment which has become broader in terms of the types of tactics. So everything from these more sophisticated, very carefully planned incidents, as in Brussels, as in Paris, right through to the more impromptu, less sophisticated, less predictable activities that we saw in London. It's also against a wider range of targets. So it's not just your traditional symbolic or political targets, but it's public spaces, soft targets. That, of course, includes transportation networks. And then finally, the types of actors that are conducting these attacks have also become more diverse. You, of course, still have your dedicated external operations units of Islamic State and Al-Qaeda, through to self-radicalized individuals, through to individuals with personal grievances or other forms of disgruntlement who then, you know, carry out attacks in the mode of or in the mold of Islamist extremism or other types of terrorism. We also, of course, have seen an uptick in violence by other types of threat actors, not just Islamist extremists, but right-wing extremists, left-wing extremists, and certainly there will be concern about some of these tactics proliferating to those groups as well.
Jonathan, thanks. Dave, the first thing that the public, the media, and maybe even investigators want to know is where the suspect comes from. And of course, whether he's a refugee or a migrant, a question that becomes politicized fairly rapidly. In the most recent attacks, the one here in London this week, and in other attacks on the continent, the attackers have been locally born. Dave, if you can, talk to us a little bit about the relationship in Europe between migration and the terrorist threat.
Sure, and it has been confirmed that the attacker in London was born just to the southeast of London, and it is looking as if he was born under a name other than Khalid Massoud, which raises the possibility of him being a convert to Islam. We've seen in the last couple of years, as you say, a number of terrorist attacks in Europe. Most of them have been committed by native-born people. A few have been the work of relatively long-term migrants, so nothing to do with the current flows primarily from Syria, but also from other countries in Africa and Asia as well. There was obviously great prominence given to the fact that fingerprint evidence suggested that one of the Paris attackers went through a Greek island as a refugee at some point in 2015. Although that lead appears to have gone quite quiet, so we're not sure what happened about that. But in terms of the 2015-2016 movement of people into Europe that we've seen dominating the news agenda for much of that period, it's not really translated yet as terrorist attacks, and it's more about locally born and raised people deciding that they want to follow ideologies that are gaining significant traction elsewhere. So that's pretty much what we're seeing as a general pattern. There are obviously going to be exceptions to it, but the London attack appears to fit it for now.
Dave, do you see any common threads between the attacks in London and the ones that came previous to this, the attack on the Christmas market in Germany, and then, of course, Belgium and Paris? Are there any common strands to everything that's happening in Europe?
I think it's very important to try and look for commonalities, but I wouldn't be too keen to overstate their importance when you do find them. Jonathan talked a moment ago about the significance of vehicular attacks and its development as a method in the last couple of years. And I think what we're seeing more generally is the prevalence of these low-tech attacks, be it vehicles or be it knives, particularly in places where firearms, which was the previous trend, going back 4 or 5 years now, firearms rather than explosives, particularly in places where firearms are quite difficult to obtain, such as the UK. So I think these attacks, generally by people who don't appear to be the most fervent adherents to Islamist extremist ideology. We remember the Nice attacker was not believed to be particularly religious until a short time before, similar in Berlin. So it seems that these attacks are being committed increasingly by peripheral figures within extremist circles. They tend to be known about, but they're not considered major dangers. That's obviously something that's going to have to cause the security services throughout Europe to have a rethink and to remodel its analysis of groups and how they function.
Dave, thanks. Jonathan, as the nature of the threat and its execution evolve, how are companies meant to evolve in their anticipation of and their response to further attacks?
Well, companies have been looking at this changing threat environment for a couple of years now and beginning to think about how best to respond. And one of the first actions and activities is to review their understanding of the threat environment. And in some cases, this has meant, you know, not just focusing on a major bomb attack in a city center, but looking at active shooter scenarios, looking at vehicle ramming, look at operational disruption from security lockdowns as other aspects of the threat environment. And so we've certainly seen those become more prominent, and to some degree as well, becoming the center of crisis management activities, threat planning, operational risk management. A number of other things are going into place in companies in Western Europe and Western countries. In particular, these include more training for staff around some of these scenarios, so things like active shooter, for example, marauding terrorist attacks, looking at how they can satisfy their duty of care through guidance and reassurance in the event of these types of incidents. Of course, one of the main issues in an attack, whether it's of the scale of London or a larger attack such as the scale of Paris a year and a half ago, is making sure that they can account for their staff. These are cities where companies are either based or where they have a great deal of business travel occurring. So accounting for staff, being able to rapidly identify whether or not they have had anyone involved or caught up directly or indirectly in the incident is, of course, of paramount importance. And then finally, we've started to see companies begin to think about how they can improve their understanding of the threat environment through more and more sophisticated intelligence and collection and analysis through cooperation with some of their peer organizations in these jurisdictions to share information about threats, to validate information about threats, and of course, building relationships with local security services and other agencies. So there's really quite a range of activities that our companies are undertaking, but broadly they are shifting their emphasis on the higher end, sophisticated end of the terrorism threat spectrum, more towards these smaller scale but less predictable attacks, as indeed we saw in London this week.
Jonathan, Dave, before we move on and wrap up, are there any other particular issues that we should be thinking about in connection with the terrorist threat and its presence here in Europe? Jonathan?
I mean, certainly when we look out over the course of the next year and beyond, there are some pressures in the global environment that are likely to influence Western Europe, Western countries, and globally. These are, of course, most significantly the course of the conflict in Syria, where the Islamic State group is experiencing very significant strategic and territorial setbacks, where there's been an accelerating exodus of the very large foreign fighter population. And as we know, of course, that population from Western Europe is historically unprecedented, but it's also beginning or likely to have an impact on other regions. There are several thousand people involved in the conflict in Syria with IS or other groups from North Africa, from the North Caucasus region of Russia, from South and Southeast Asia. And so these are all regions that are likely to see some pressure on the threat environment as a result of Islamic State losing ground in Syria and Iraq. We are also, of course, facing, and this has certainly been one of the points of discussion in the wake of the London attack, a new, evolving, dynamic media and social media environment in which many of these attacks are occurring. There are some operational dimensions of this to the degree to which in some previous incidents in Europe, the attackers have been in communication with so-called virtual controllers or planners in Syria. But it also, of course, includes the role that easy access to propaganda, sophisticated vernacular, localized propaganda put out by these groups has appeared to play a role in the incitement, maybe even the guidance and training for these types of incidents. That's certainly one strand of the inquiry here in London, was whether or not the individual involved had downloaded any of this material, whether or not he was familiar with any of the guidance that either Islamic State or Al-Qaeda have put out in recent years about vehicle-based attacks. These parts of the threat environment are very likely to continue beyond the current wave of terrorism, and I think the security and intelligence services in Europe are certainly concerned and thinking about this and thinking about ways, as Dave said, to remodel their analysis of these groups and respond more effectively to how the threat environment might change in the future.
Dave, any final thoughts on things that you're looking out for in the coming weeks and months in connection with terrorist activity in Europe?
Yeah, obviously, in the coming weeks, we'd expect a lot of false alarms and a lot of abundance of caution on the part of security services for wondering if there's going to be another attack, be that in terms of vehicles or another matter. We remember after Paris, we saw a number of alerts elsewhere in France and also in Germany. So I think we probably will see a few of these. I think, as we said a moment ago, the fact that this attacker appears to have been a peripheral figure suggests that the fact that Islamic State has put a claim of responsibility out isn't really that significant. They do want to sow division within Europe, and so they are going to claim responsibility because, realistically, the attack is not around to deny it. Nobody's going to deny it. So Islamic State may step up that rhetoric in the next couple of weeks, but I don't really think it matters a great deal in relation to this attack in London or any others we see coming forward.
Dave, thanks. Before we sign off, here are a few other issues we're watching closely in the coming few weeks.
British Prime Minister Theresa May will trigger Article 50 on the 29th of March, thereby beginning the process of taking the United Kingdom out of the European Union, so-called Brexit.
And in Turkey, on the 16th of April, voters will go to the poll to decide whether to alter the country's constitution and award Recep Tayyip Erdogan executive presidential powers.
And then on the 23rd of April, French voters go to the polls in the first round of voting in their presidential election. France has a two-step presidential election process, and the first round pits a long list of candidates, including Emmanuel Macron, far-right candidate Marine Le Pen, centre-right candidate François Fillon, Socialist Party candidate Benoît Hamon against each other. Then the top two candidates in round one will progress to a second ballot on the 7th of May. And after that, we'll know who the next president of France is.
That's it for the Risk Map podcast for the end of March 2017. Thanks for dialing in. I'm Jonathan Wood in London.
And from Athens, I'm David Lee. Find us every 2 weeks on Podbean, the Control Risk website, and on iTunes. For more about risk and opportunity in 2017, don't forget to visit the Risk Map website on riskmap.controlrisk.com. Thanks for joining.
And finally from London, I'm Charles Hecker. A very big thanks to David Lee and Jonathan Wood. And for now, so long from London.